Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. And we're expecting to speak with Bishop Christopher Coyne this morning, the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington, right now having a little difficulty locating the bishop, but I'll tell you what we hope to talk about. After a violent mob attacked the U.S. Capitol building last week, many observers and concerned Americans turned to a common phrase, "We're better than this." And when Bishop Christopher Coyne, who is the top Catholic Church official in Vermont, heard that refrain, he did take issue with it. In a message to Vermonters, he wrote, quote, "Right now, we as a country are not better than this. We are what we are, divided, angry, sick, both figuratively and bodily, fear-filled and lost. We may become better than this, and I know we can be better than this, but right now we are not better than this." And Christopher Coyne is the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington, and he said those words after seeing what was unfolding in Washington. Listeners, once we get the bishop, if you'd like to join us, our numbers are 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. We hope to discuss that and also talk about the COVID pandemic and how that has affected the church. And still trying to get Bishop Christopher Coyne talking about moral leadership. And we hope to address the violence that occurred last Wednesday with him and his response to it. And again, he said, you know, we fall back on the line, we're better than this, but we are showing as a nation and as a people that we are not better than this at this time in our lives, in our history. Our numbers are 244-1777, also 877-291-8255, and looks like we still have not been able to reach the bishop. So if you'd like to call in and give your thoughts, we'd certainly appreciate that. 244-1777. Toll free, it's 877-291-8255. And some of the things that we will discuss, the violence at the Capitol, really a roller coaster of emotions for everyone who observed it last week. And so we want to learn, you know, what the bishop thought and why he responded by saying that we are not better than this at this time in our history. Our numbers here, 244-1777, also 877-291-8255, and hoping to connect with Bishop Christopher Coyne. He's the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington, which is the entire state of Vermont. So any of the, I think it's... I don't even want to venture a guess how many Catholics. I thought I knew the number, but I'd be making that up right now, and that would be the wrong thing to do. Again, our numbers are 244-1777, 877-291-8255. For any listeners who care to call in right now, or for the bishop, if you're listening right now, you can call in 244-1777 as we try to conduct this interview with Bishop Christopher Coyne, who is the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington. But we do have a call from Gary in Barrie. And Gary, thanks for calling Vermont Viewpoint. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I like to talk about what happened in Washington and sure. Go beyond that.
Okay.
What happened in Washington was bad. It shouldn't have got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because the election wasn't fairly done right. Did Joe Biden really win the election? I don't think so, because there's a lot of inconsistency with what took place. And I think people have a right to say, hey, we don't appreciate what took place. You know, we don't appreciate our vote not counting when it should. And you know, nobody did anything about his son in China. And that's sad, because this is where our country's going. It's more going to China. Now, the question is, when Biden becomes president, is our jobs going to go back to China? At least Trump brought him back and done the best for this country. Now, should he be impeached? Yeah, probably, because of what he caused, or he should just get out of office. But is it fair for saying this election is fair? No.
Have you
we
been able
to take a deep look at it?
Well,
and they'll probably find out after he gets in office that the election was rigged.
Have you seen anything, Gary? Because there's been a lot of talk about this being unfair and that there was a lot of voter fraud. Have you seen anything that really, you know, you've been able to say and point to, there it is, you know, there's the fraud, especially in a state where, you know, it was pretty close and could have tipped the balance?
Well, it's pretty strange that President Trump was ahead by thousands of votes, hundreds of thousands of votes in these states, and all of a sudden they shut down the state. I watched what they did.
Yep.
They put pizza boxes up so that the Republican people who were supposed to check the ballots weren't even allowed to look in or even allowed to go in. How can you call that a fair election when you're supposed to have a Republican and a Democrat look at what's going on and nobody's letting them do that? That's not fair.
And if that is the case, Gary, you're right. This definitely should be investigated, and I think we will hear a lot more in the months to follow. Unfortunately, a very short time period in between the election and when someone has to take control of this country. Fred in Newbury is next. Fred, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you know, I think about all this business. I thought that President Gerald Ford performed a stroke of genius when he pardoned Nixon. He put the whole thing to bed. If Joe wants to put this thing to bed, he's got to pardon the president of all federal crimes so Joe can get to work and not have all this baloney going on.
Yeah, I get your point, Fred, because quite honestly, once there's a transfer of power, and if we do follow with, lawsuit after lawsuit, this continues for a long time, and the foment probably stirred up again and again and again. So I definitely can see that, doing that might be the way forward, the path forward for this country. I take your point. Next is Mary calling from Randolph. Our numbers are 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Reflecting again on what happened in Washington, we had hoped to have Bishop Christopher Coyne with us to flesh out a bit more of his comments about the fact that when we say we're better than this, what we showed on Wednesday, we may not be better than this as a country. Mary, you're up next. Thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm talking about the voter fraud. I heard a great, great interview yesterday, and they were interviewing, actually, Major Garrett from CBS News was interviewing an election law expert, David Becker. And it was such an interesting interview, and Mr. Becker went up one side and down the other side of all of the facts and figures that have been thrown out there, and determined that this was a true and fair election, and one of the best, actually, figure-wise, that we've had in a very long time. So it's a very interesting, I would suggest people Google David Becker, election law expert, and listen to that because it's very educational. And he's not political as far as, Republican or Democrat or progressive or anything like that. He's just giving the facts. And it was really enlightening.
It has been interesting that, in states like Georgia, where there was a total recount and where there is a Republican Secretary of State, and one that many people have pointed to as a state where there was election fraud, no numbers have been really reversed. We'd had been alerted for many months, maybe a full year ahead of this election, that there was going to be widespread rampant fraud. So we would have thought that There'd be more eyes, more attention focused on doing this right and avoiding any improprieties. And yet, there's still claims that it had gone on. So
exactly. And you know, sometimes when people hear this enough, they start to believe it. And when you say something long enough, you start to believe it yourself. And I think that's what's happened. I also have to agree with Bishop Coyne in that we are in the past, and hopefully coming to the future, we will be better than we are right now. And we need to really focus on that and be kind and caring to each other and do our very best.
Mary, here in Vermont, are you finding that we're a little bit different from the rest of the nation, or are we the same, that we are better than this here in Vermont, or, you know, we're not. We don't listen to each other. We don't conduct ourselves civilly when we meet people who disagree with us.
I think for the most part, we do have conversation, and we can listen to each other. And we're not always going to agree, and that's okay. But I do think we just live in a different area. We have a different mindset, I think. And, you know, it's maybe a little less stressful and an environment that helps us feel like that. And we are a little more open to listen to our neighbors.
I hope you're right, Mary. I think that's what most of us experience here in Vermont, and I appreciate you calling this morning. We were expecting to speak with Bishop Christopher Coyne of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington. Unfortunately, we believe he's been called away. We haven't been able to reach him. You can call in now and tell us what you think about what happened on Wednesday in Washington. Our numbers are 244-1777, 877-291-8255. 877-291-TALK is our toll-free number. And we're also responding to what Bishop Coyne said after he watched what happened, after he heard people saying, we're better than this. And Bishop Coyne said this, quote, right now, we as a country are not better than this. We are what we are, divided, angry, sick, both figuratively and bodily, fear-filled and lost. We may become better than this, and I know we can be better than this, but right now we are not better than this. And it draws, you know, the analogy of a sports coach who says, you know, of a team that's 4-11, we're not a 4-11 team. And yet if you are 4-11, you know, you are what your record is basically, the point that is made. And in this case, you know, are we what our record is? What is our record right now after what we saw on Wednesday in Washington? Unfortunately, it looks woeful. Is that where we are as a country, as people of this country? Can we communicate with one another? Are we able to talk, to air our views, but also to listen to those views that are completely divergent? Will we give everyone a chance? We all kind of live in that echo chamber where we surround ourselves with people who say the same thing as we believe. But are we willing to accept? Are we willing to listen to someone who does not agree with us? And how do we conduct ourselves when we are in that situation? Love to hear your thoughts at 244-1777. 877-291-8255. Those are our numbers, and I still have 7 minutes to go before our next break. So it'd be great to hear from you, especially if you've never called before. Please, you know, feel free. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and I won't judge. And if I do, you can tell me if I've crossed that line. 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Those are our numbers. That toll-free number is also 877-291-TALK, so a little bit easier to remember. And let's see who we've got calling in. We have another call coming in right now, so give me a sec here. All right. And Dick's calling from Waterbury. Dick, thank you for calling. Go right ahead with your thoughts today.
Good morning. Yeah. I don't know how many people may have watched the 60 Minutes interview last night with Raffensperger, I believe he's the Secretary of State in Georgia.
That's correct.
As well as the other inspector, overseer person. The extent to which Trump went to them on his phone call trying to get them to find 11,000 more votes, you know, it's crazy.
And just to refresh people, Dick, it was an hour-long phone call that the Secretary of State of Georgia, who is a Republican, remained respectful, but also did record that discussion. He came under some heat for recording and releasing.
In the interview last night, if I heard it correctly, he did not know it was being recorded.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Yes. But both of these people are Republicans. Both of them voted for Trump. And yet, every single allegation that has been made, they have outlined it point by point by point. That did not happen. You don't have your facts straight. And I think at this point, it does not matter what is said or done. If you're a Trump supporter, you're a Trump supporter. And like he said in an interview some time ago, he probably could commit murder in New York City and he wouldn't be charged because people think that highly of him.
He is held in great regard by his supporters. That is absolutely true. Don't know if he would get away from murder, but he did say that.
In his supporters' eyes, he would. That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
Dick, and that's gone too far.
Yeah, I appreciate that call. And, he brings up an excellent point. The Secretary of State is, in most cases, an elected official, or in some states. I'm not going to mention pretend to know all, but runs on, a party ticket. But then in their job, overseeing elections has to remain as neutral as anyone possibly can. It's probably a very difficult thing to do, despite having, political pressure or being part of a political party. And yet, they know that their most important position is to conduct and to ensure that all of their elections are indeed fair, or as fair as they can possibly be. Was there some voter fraud? It's probably impossible to say there was absolutely none anywhere in the United States during this election. There's usually a case of, especially with early voting, someone could have voted early and possibly shown up at an election site and voted again. At one point, President Trump even told people to do so. But we haven't heard any or seen any proof of widespread voter fraud that could have tipped the balances one way or the other. Doesn't mean it didn't exist. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that as of right now, and as our first caller, Gary, said, it could come out in the future because, that's what happens, in time. Sometimes things are unveiled. One more quick call before we take a break here. And let's see who we've got. Marsha, I'm going to ask you to be as quick as possible. Go right ahead. We are almost out of time.
Okay, thank you. I'll be quick.
Thank you.
When you vote by mail and it's received by your clerk, you're checked off on a list.
Mm-hmm.
Your name is checked off as having voted. So when you go to the poll and try to vote a second time, you can't because your name is already there checked off as voted.
In theory, you are correct, and hopefully that system. Thank you, Marsha. Great call. Hopefully that system did hold up throughout this election, in which we saw a lot of early voting, in which we saw a record turnout of voters. Which that's one thing this country should be proud of, and yes, we were better in that regard. I apologize that we couldn't reach Bishop Coyne this morning. He's the Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington. We'll try to get him back on maybe tomorrow. We're going to pop out right now for a CBS News update. When we come back, we're going to learn about the 251 Club of Vermont, a club that encourages people to visit every city and town in the state. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Things are strange right now, but we are here for you at the Warren Store. Whether curbside or in-store, our newly renovated state-of-the-art deli will be putting out sandwiches, soups, salads, and grab-and-go meals. Check out our website for menus and hours. Lattes coming soon. New upstairs, Free People, Burt's Bees baby clothes, Tabitha Henry luminaries, holiday ornaments, cards, and much more. We hope to be online soon for your shopping convenience. Stay safe, follow the governor's guidelines, and have a healthy, happy holiday season. Fun, funky, and friendly, the Warren Store. Main Street, Warren Village.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. There are over 4,000 people in Vermont and across the country who have joined something called the 251 Club of Vermont. That doesn't mean they've been to every city and town in the state, but that they aspire to at some point in their lives. That means they'll find their way into the near impossible to wander into Baltimore, Vermont. Well, they'll make their way to, into the end-of-the-earth Isle Lamotte, which is worth going to. And they'll belly off Route 7 to see what there actually is in Leicester. What drives these people to get to really know all these little spots on the map, to possibly also find their ways into villages like Goose Green, Central Park, St. Rocks, and Westminster West, not West Westminster? Here to let us know what drives these folks to drive all over the state to check off another city or town from their 251 scorecard, which is kind of like a birder's life list, is the club's executive director, Stephanie Young. Stephanie, thank you for virtually traveling to Waterbury this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you for having us this morning.
It's our pleasure. Listeners, you can call to join the discussion if you've got a question about the 251 Club, or if you're tracking down all 251 yourself, give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. And you can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. All right, Stephanie, what exactly is the 251 Club?
So the 251 Club is a organization in the state of Vermont, and like you said, we have over 4,000 members, and the goal of the members is to visit all 251 cities and towns in Vermont. So as you mentioned, you don't have to have already visited the towns or cities. You can sign up as soon as you want to start traveling through the state and checking off towns. So that is the main purpose of the club, is to explore a beautiful state and check off all the cities and towns.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, they'll say, oh, you've done all 251, so you're a member. But that you become a plus member once you hit the 251 mark.
Absolutely. So you can join, you know, even if you've only been to one town in Vermont, you can join if you're not even a Vermont resident.
Right.
And then when you have gone through all 251 towns and cities, you do become a plus member. And one of the things that really has interested me as executive director is how many members we have doing it again after they've gone through all 251. They have so much fun traveling to the state of Vermont that they sign up again and they start over.
I love that. Where did the idea for this 251 Club come from?
Yeah, so back in 1954, Dr. Peach, he was writing for the Vermont Magazine, and he received a question of, how do you get to know the real Vermont? And so he came up with this idea that the way that you get to know the real Vermont is by traveling through the state and visiting all 251 cities and towns. So it has grown out of that back in 1954, and we recently just celebrated our 65 years, and we're still going strong.
How far along are you, Stephanie?
Yeah, so I am only at 112 towns, so I haven't even completed the full 251. And I always tell everybody that part of the reason is that I am doing our 251 Club adventures with my two children. I have a 10 and a 6-year-old. And so we take a little bit slower going through the towns. We love to plan out a day where we have one destination where we're going to spend a few hours. And then we will check off a few towns around that destination. So usually for our family, it takes us, for one day, we do between 2 to 4 towns. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're going a little bit slow. But we absolutely love the memories that we're creating. And I love that my kids are getting a chance to see all of Vermont.
I love that, too. What are some places you've discovered so far while doing the club that you've really enjoyed?
Yeah, so this is always such a tough question because there are so many places that we have discovered. And I think one of the draws of the club is that you do discover these places in Vermont that you would not have discovered unless you were trying to go out and check off towns. One that comes to mind is the Museum of Everyday Life. I don't know if you've ever been there, Rick.
Oh, but of
but
course.
It's in Glover, Vermont.
Yes, in Glover. Love Glover.
Absolutely. And we discovered it two summers ago. And it's just this very unique museum in Glover, Vermont. And you walk in there and there's a sign that says, you know, visitors turn on lights and turn them off when you leave.
That's right.
And it's a museum that focuses on everyday objects. So that is one place that really stuck out to us. And it's a great example of a place that we would not have discovered unless we were going out on one of our 251 Club adventures. And we ended up combining that day with going to Lake Willoughby as well, which
Perfect.
Is another place we had never been to.
Yeah,
so it was a really fun day.
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't get me started on that Glover Metroplex. I hate to give too much love to one area, but I love Glover because of that museum, because of you've got the Bread and Puppet, you've got in West Glover,
yes.
Parker Pie, you've got the great general store with all the taxidermy, and that's Courier's, and then there's the Red Sky Trading Company. I'll stop right now because we've got to go to a call. Andrea is joining us from Randolph. Andrea, go right ahead. Thanks for calling. Are you there, Andrea?
This is hello. Hi. This is very interesting. I'm glad you're on.
Sure.
I'm the chamber chair for Randolph area, and we would like to know how to help promote area features
mm-hmm.
through the 251 Club.
Oh, great question. Mm-hmm. Stephanie?
Yeah. Hi, good morning, Andrea. That is a great question. And I have to say, we checked off Randolph. My children and I, we stopped by the Whale Tails because we live in Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
So we always see the ones off of Williston. So we went down your way to check off the Whale Tails there. And it was a beautiful view of the mountains behind it. I would love to chat with you more about you know, how you can promote the Randolph area. We are putting together, and this is one of the resources that members get if they join the 251 Club. We try to come up with itineraries, and we come up, you know, with suggested day trips where you can check off multiple towns. So we would love to feature, you know, stops in Randolph and in the Randolph area that you think members would love to see, you know, the Whale Tails, or if there's a great place to grab a coffee.
Great.
And we would absolutely include that in our itineraries because we think that would be helpful to members. And then we also
that's
have
what I was thinking. Yeah,
presence. Yeah. So
well, we service our Chamber of Commerce is the White River Valley Chamber of Commerce, so we service 11 communities around the Central Vermont region. And yes, I will get in touch with you after today, and we can talk more about that. Good luck, and thank you.
That
this is a great session.
Thanks,
Bye.
Andrea.
Oh,
I'm glad she called. I'll tell you why, Stephanie, because I had been to Randolph several times before mm-hmm. I did the 251 Club, and I, you know, could check it off. But I still went back to Randolph and parked the car and walked around with a camera and found places and things I had never seen before. And one of them is one of my favorite. It's kind of ramshackle, but hard against the railroad tracks is the old building of the Randolph Coal and Ice Company, which sounds like a real dichotomy. But it's this wonderful old building, and I love taking pictures. I even take people back to see the Randolph Coal and Ice Company. But all around Randolph, there's wonderful buildings. I love great architecture. There's a barbershop with a stuffed catamount. I'm using air quotes there. But one of those towns that even if you've been as a 251 Club member, it kind of forces you to go back and really look at a town, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I think that's one of the draws of the 251 Club of Vermont. Even if you grew up in Vermont –
The club really gives you a chance to rediscover Vermont. So you might go back to a town that you've gone through, you know, hundreds of times and see something that you have never had before. And then you might go to these areas that you've never been to, even if you grew up in Vermont, and discover that part of Vermont. So it really does give you a chance to rediscover where you're living or where you might have grown up.
Stephanie, people always want to know, what are the rules about being a 251 Club member when I get to a town? What do they have to do?
Great. I'm so glad that you asked that question, Rick. So there are no rules for the 251 Club of Vermont, which makes it a lot of fun for members. It is up to you as a member of the 251 Club how you want to check that town off. So we have had some members who have ran through all the towns. We have some members who have walked. And then we have members like me who will drive to the town and then get out right. and walk around the town. So it is up to the members how they want to check off those towns. And I should also add that there's no time limit how long it takes you. So we have some members who, you know, if they take the summer and they go through it very quickly, they can do it in the summer. But we've also had members that we just had one member who finished, and it took them 34 years.
Wow.
And the reason is, and it's interesting, because no matter how long it takes members to finish their quest, we hear one theme, and that theme is always, it was always about the journey, and it was always about the memories, and it wasn't about, you know, how quickly can I check off the towns? It was really creating those memories and the journey through traveling through the state of Vermont.
I've been run out of many Vermont cities and towns, but I don't know that I will run to them. So what are the advantages of becoming a member of the 251 Club?
Yeah, so when you become a member of the 251 Club, you will receive our newsletter that we send out by mail 3 times a year. And in that newsletter, you are updated on what the club is doing. But then you also hear stories from members about completing their journey or who we have partnered with and how to go about, you know, completing your 251 Club journey. You also get access to your personal 251 Club page online, and you can check off towns and track your progress and upload pictures. And then member resources as well, like those itineraries that I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, you get invited to our annual meeting. We hold a meeting once a year. This past annual meeting, we had the Clemens Family Farm, which was an amazing speaker. We had Lydia Clemens from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say, actually, one other thing that you get as becoming a member of the 251 Club is just that sense of community. You're with, you have that sense of community with other members. And one thing that is common throughout all of our members is that we're all very passionate about Vermont, and we're very passionate about traveling to the cities and towns of Vermont as well.
Now, Stephanie, you've been director for about a year, so what changes have you made to the club?
Hey, so one of the first changes that I wanted to make was that I wanted to have online payment. We didn't have online payment before 2020. So now we have made it easier to join the 251 Club of Vermont. For 1 year, it's $22. For 5 years, it's $58. So you can go and sign up online at 251.com. If you want to send checks in, you can do that as well. So that was one of the first changes that I wanted to implement. We also now have a social media presence. We have a Facebook page as well as Twitter. And what I love about the Facebook page and Twitter is that you have members weighing in on tips of how to get to some of those, you know, towns that may be hard to get to, like Lewis, or sharing pictures of their journeys, or really just a sense of community on the social media pages as well.
And
so
that,
those were some of the first two changes.
Nice. That website, again, is vt251.com. Stephanie, can people still do the 251 Club safely during this pandemic?
Yes, absolutely. So Governor Scott, you know, he really talked about staycations, and we fit perfectly into the idea of the staycation. You can go out for a day, adhere to public health guidelines,
and the safety precautions with COVID and visit a town. We've had a lot of members reach out to us who, we had one member who said that she used to go every Sunday to a restaurant to eat breakfast, and she's replaced that with 251 Adventures. She goes out with a picnic lunch with her husband, and she goes and she finds a lake, for instance, where she is socially distanced from everybody and eats her breakfast out by the lake and checks off her town. So you absolutely can partake in 251 Club and still adhere to the public safety guidelines.
And get some great quality time with loved ones. Since you've been involved with the club, who are some of the people that you've met who are doing this?
Right. So there are many, many members who are very passionate, like I mentioned earlier. One member that I met in the very beginning of when I became executive director, or I should say met over email and online because of COVID,
right.
She actually reached out to me because she was going to get married, and she was going to honeymoon out of state, and COVID changed those plans completely. This was back in March and April. So she reached out to me, and she signed up for the 251 Club of Vermont to do this as a honeymoon with her husband and check off town, because, again, it was something safe that you could do during COVID if you took the proper precautions, and because she couldn't travel out of state. So I've had a chance, and that's one of my favorite aspects of being the executive director, is communicating with members and hearing these kind of stories, where, you know, we had another member who said that he joined 251 in 2020 to chase away the virus blues. So it's been great meeting these members and hearing stories.
Oh, that's pretty great. I know some people do some interesting, funky things. You said, for instance, people run or they'll take maybe their motorcycle. But some people will make sure that they visit like a specific spot in each town, like a library or something. What are things like that that you've heard?
Yes, so the library is absolutely a popular one. We also have members who like to try to find the welcome sign in each town and take a picture or the sign that says that you're into the new town. We've also had one member who hit a golf ball in each town, so that's how he did it. Other popular sites are post offices. We've had members, you know, travel throughout the state visiting breweries and stopping along the way and checking off each brewery and then towns surrounding the breweries. But I think post offices are probably very popular as well.
Oh, yeah, the post offices. And you've had someone who's, it showed, I think, last year, 2019 probably, a movie about their exploits of doing the 251 Club with friends.
Yeah, so that he's actually our board member now.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, and he produced One Town at a Time. And he was generous enough, if you go to our website, bt251.com, and you click on news, you can link up to his documentary, and you can watch the entire documentary now online. He was showing it at libraries and other places, but unfortunately, because of COVID, he can no longer do that. But his documentary, he completed the 251 Club in 2006, and then he left the state for a few years, and then he came back, and he completed the 251 journey again. And along the way, he interviewed Vermonters that he had met in 2006 and talked to them about what had changed in Vermont. So it's a great documentary. It's a lot of fun to watch.
It really is. Stephanie, what do people get from driving around the state and visiting places like Holland and Halifax and Fairhaven?
Right. So I think first it's a challenge that you can have to check off all the towns and to find these towns. But again, you know, it goes back to those memories. I can't stress it enough, the memories and the journey. And then also just really back to what Dr. Peach and why he started the club, you get a true sense of what Vermont is about and its beauty as well. But I know for us, you know, my kids and I, we talk about the journeys that we've done and the adventures, and we always laugh. There's always a funny story. There's always a moment. We've had moments where you know, you're on that road and you're like, uh-oh, I don't know where we are. You know, this road has snow on it. Let's just get off this road and find that. You have those moments where you look back and you just have those memories that you can create. But you do get to know Vermont as well.
I know that road, and it's about half the state. We're just about out of time, but why should someone join the 251 Club?
Right. I think it really will be a chance for you to have some 251 Club adventures that we like to call. I think you will have a lot of fun traveling through the state of Vermont, and you will absolutely discover places and restaurants and state parks that you would not have discovered if it hadn't been, you know, going out and checking off the towns. And that sense of community, which I think we really do like in the state of Vermont, that sense of community and being part of a club and being part of that challenge.
When are you heading out on your next adventure?
Yeah, I think we're going to try some snowshoeing down in Stratton. We haven't been down there yet, so I'm excited. My boys are a little bit older now, so they can, you know, partake in cross-country skiing now and snowshoeing, which is perfect for this time of year and lets us socially distance. So I think we're headed down that way.
Well done. Stephanie Young is the executive director of the 251 Club of Vermont. The website is vt251.com. Stephanie, it was great having you on the program this morning.
Great. Thank you so much, Rick, and have a great day.
You too. CBS News is next, and then we'll be back to talk with Meg Smith of the Vermont Women's Fund. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Things are strange right now, but we are here for you at the Warren Store. Whether curbside or in-store, our newly renovated state-of-the-art deli will be putting out sandwiches, soups, salads, and grab-and-go meals. Check out our website for menus and hours. Lattes coming soon. New upstairs, Free People, Burt's Bees baby clothes, Tabitha Henry luminaries, holiday ornaments, cards, and much more. We hope to be online soon for your shopping convenience. Stay safe, follow the governor's guidelines, and have a healthy, happy holiday season. Fun, funky, and friendly, the Warren Store. Main Street, Warren Village.
We're back with Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. Be careful when you call into this program. You just might wind up as a guest. On Friday, when I was interviewing Senate President Pro Tem Becca Ballin, we got a call from Meg Smith of the Vermont Women's Fund with a question. As soon as the show ended, I was on the phone to Meg to have her be a guest on today's program. Meg joins us now to discuss the work of the fund and to discuss the needs of women in Vermont. Meg Smith, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you, Rick. I didn't realize that my question would then suddenly land me on the air with you.
I was jotting down your name and number as soon as while you were calling. Listeners, we want to know what questions you have, or you can tell us about how the Vermont Women's Fund has helped you or someone you know. Our numbers are 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And I guess, Meg, I should tell everyone, don't worry, if you call, it doesn't mean you have to be a guest on the show in the future, all right? We'll have that provision so that people will still call. Meg,
yes,
give us an idea of exactly what the Vermont Women's Fund is.
The Vermont Women's Fund is a philanthropic resource that was started 26, now going on 27 years ago, by a group of women in Vermont who were dissatisfied with the services and programs that were available for women and girls. There were very few. And the economic resources of women were not in good shape. Women often, and I'm sorry to say this remains, were in low-wage jobs, not paid equally. And the empowerment of starting a women's fund was also teaching women about philanthropy and the importance of their own financial power. And this was at a time when they were still, and I know this continues today, but often women had no financial power at all in a marriage or a relationship. And so it was a new and exciting and radical idea that was spreading all over the country. There are women's funds that were founded roughly around the same time in every state and in many counties within states around the country. So Vermont was not an exception, but it didn't mean that it was any easier to make it happen. And so this group of women got organized and decided that they wanted to build the resources of a fund so they could give out grants. And they contacted the Vermont Community Foundation, who is, I'm hoping most listeners know the Community Foundation. And we, the Women's Fund, became a component fund of the Community Foundation, which means that they help manage our investment, our endowment, provide great resources, and the Community Foundation is connected to almost every nonprofit in the state of Vermont. So they're a wonderful resource for us as well.
Are there specific principles that guide the work you do at the fund?
Yes. I mean, primarily, the fund was founded to make change on behalf of women, to improve the lives of women and girls in Vermont. And over the years, as with any organization, as it matures and gets more advanced, the Women's Fund really honed in on economic security. And what that means is the ability to have a job that allows you to provide for your family, to have a more than livable wage, to have to get the equal pay, and to have access to services and that should be available to everyone.
You also encourage the idea of women as philanthropists. So is that necessary and is that important?
That's tremendously important, and yes, it's necessary. You know, again, in earlier days when women had less control, financial resources, many acts of philanthropy would go towards supporting institutions like colleges and hospitals and all wonderful, worthy causes.
Right.
But what the Women's Fund is about is really, we are an activist fund. We are out to make change on behalf of women and girls and the communities they live in. Because when women do well, communities thrive. And that is a fact that has been recognized and acknowledged around the world. So when women have healthy economic opportunities, they also give back directly to their communities.
Can you give us some examples of some of the early work of the Women's Fund?
Okay. One that stands out that continues to this day, there was a woman who put herself through law school, and she had grown up, I believe, I don't want to say the town because I may get it wrong, but it was a small town in Vermont. And she had come from a family and a background of abuse and domestic abuse. And she was first a trucker. That was her occupation. And then she was able to put herself through law school at Vermont Law School, got her degree, and applied to the Women's Fund for a grant in order to get her nonprofit going called Have Justice Will Travel. And she wanted to serve women around the state who were isolated and in rural areas to help them fight the domestic abuse in their own lives. And so the Women's Fund gave her a grant, in fact, over one or several years, and her name is Winona Ward. And Winona outfitted her car with a very early version of a cell phone and a computer, and she drove all over the state helping women who were really had no other recourse against the abuse that they were facing in their lives. And Winona provided the legal resource, which they so needed. So that's a great example of how the Women's Fund used its funding to pilot a program that helped women specifically and had a greater purpose as well, to recognize the problems behind domestic abuse and sexual violence.
How is the Vermont Women's Fund funded today?
We are funded by wonderful people throughout Vermont and the business community. We get donations from women and men from all over the state, also from some out-of-state residents who either have second homes or they just there's a woman who sent a contribution, lives in Florida, lived in Vermont most of her life, and she said she just wants to keep supporting Vermonters and women in Vermont, even though she's no longer a resident. So we get contributions and donations from individuals, and we also have tremendous support from the business community. The business community also recognizes in today's world the importance of gender equity in the workplace. You'll hear a little bit more about that from Joey Bergstein from Seventh Generation, who's going to talk about what they did in their company. But that is how we are funded. We get some foundation grants, but it's called collective philanthropy. It's the power of this grassroots organization that has just grown and grown. Fill in one thing, Rick, sure. Just that since we started, the Women's Fund started in 1994, and I just want to mention, had a couple of there were about 9 or 10 founders, some of whom some of the listeners might recognize. Sally Soule, who was a legislator for a long time, Brenda Bisbee, Mary Malloy, Billy Gosch were just a handful of some of the founders, Gwendolyn Duquette, another person. And since the Women's Fund started, because they raised $1 million in the first couple of years, then went and raised another $1 million within the first 10 years of the organization. $2 million was raised that's put in an endowment. But since that time, since our very start, over 27 years, we've distributed over $3 million to nonprofits that support women and girls in Vermont.
Meg, women are outliving men. They've been moving into occupations and roles that traditionally weren't as welcoming to women, and hopefully with higher earnings. So will we see a shift in wealth to women in the future, or are we seeing it now?
We are seeing it now. The shift in wealth is primarily right now coming through inherited wealth. Mm-hmm. And I wish I don't have all the stats in front of me, but in the next 10 years, the amount of money that is going to be in women, is going to be owned by women, is going to shift even more dramatically. I believe 51% of wealth is now in women's hands, and I believe that's going to go up significantly in the next decade. That's because women often outlive their spouses, and so they inherit from their spouse, but they also inherit from the parent. So there's just been this generational shift that's been happening, and it's going to accelerate. So that's significant. The number of women the number of women who are primary breadwinners in their family has also grown exponentially over the last few years. And again, I hate quoting stats when I don't have them in front of me, but I am pretty sure.
We're going to bring 41%. In Allie Johnson Kurtz next, who has a lot of the stats.
Yes, she does.
And joining us now is Allie Johnson Kurtz, Communications Director of Change the Story. Allie, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or if you'd like to share how the Vermont Women's Fund has helped you, you can call us at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Allie, tell us about the work that Change the Story is involved in.
Sure. Change the Story is a joint initiative of the Vermont Women's Fund, the Vermont Commission on Women, and Vermont Works for Women. And we have put out 5 reports over the past 5 years about women's economic security in the state with data that's specific to Vermont. We also do work with employers and with communities around culture change to support gender equity.
And how do you go about collecting the data in your Women Work and Wages report?
We use U.S. Census data.
Now, we won't have the time to go through all of what you learned, but I do want you to tell us what you did learn about what the data told you about poverty rates.
Sure. So we know that in Vermont, the poverty rate for women is nearly four times that of men. And when you add minor children to the household, families led by single men have a poverty rate of 16%, while families that are led by single women are more than twice as likely to live in poverty at 36.7%. So stark differences there.
And then what about women of color?
Much higher, right? So, and this tracks with national data. We're not much different from the national stats here. Women of color, white women, poverty rates around 12%. For Hispanic and Latina women, it's 17%. For Asian women, 14%. And for Black women, right around 30%.
And what about women with disabilities?
About 20% of women with disabilities live in poverty, and that's more than twice the rate for women without a disability, around 8% there.
Now, as I introduced this segment, I alluded to the wage gap. So where is that in the United States, and how does Vermont stand as far as the wage gap between men and women for the same work?
The wage gap between it's different based on race. We know that. So the difference between white men and women, it's around 22% difference. So white women making 78% of what white men make. It's 16 points higher for Black and Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander women. 42% for Native American women, 46% for Hispanic and Latino women. And we are not able to pull that out specifically for Vermont, but we know that because most of the rest of our stats follow national stats, that we're likely to see that same pattern right here in Vermont.
Meg Smith, how does this data inform the work that the Women's Fund does?
Well, it's provided tremendous information and really Vermont-based data, which is something that we have lacked when it has come to any kind of statistics. The Department of Labor and all of the state agencies that track economic development does not disaggregate their data by gender. So we only know how people do, Vermonters do. We don't know how men do versus women. So change the story was really so significant in that it looked at gender as opposed to just one flat rate. So Change the Story's data then showed us where there are significant gaps in women's economic status and advancement. We find that women still populate the majority of jobs that are in the 10 lowest wage earning jobs, and they men are dominant in the top 10 most highest paying jobs. So looking at that alone helped us as a fund start targeting where we can make real systemic change. I mean, looking at how the system is working and stacked against women. So a lot of what we're doing now, and particularly because of the pandemic, and I know we'll talk a little bit about that now, but not only are we looking out for women and girls in Vermont, we're now really, because of this data and 5 years of digging deep into this work, we're really looking ahead for women, girls in our Vermont communities, and our economic future as a state.
Allie Johnson-Kurtz, another important area of this is the time out of the labor force. So what do you learn in this area?
Yeah, so we saw that, you know, women are four times more likely than men to reduce their hours or leave the workforce to care for children or family members. And that is really showing up right now with the current pandemic. the most recent jobs report from December just came out on Friday, and we saw that employers cut 140,000 jobs nationally just in December. And when we break down into that, women actually accounted for all of the job losses, losing 156,000 jobs, while men had a net gain of actually 16,000 jobs. When we break that down one step further, women of color, Black and Latina women, actually accounted for all of those job losses by women, and white women actually had a net gain. So we're seeing that as the pandemic takes hold and over the past 10 months, that women are being hit hardest in terms of employment. And that was a pre-existing kind of crack in the system that's just been blown open with our current situation.
You also looked at student loan debt, which I found very interesting, men versus women. How does that compare?
Yes. Women actually carry about two-thirds of the outstanding debt in the United States. $929 billion. And Black women, again, carry the highest level of college debt, around $8,700 more than white women, and nearly $18,000 more than Asian women.
And also, I think there is we don't think of it in these terms normally, but there's a cost of partner violence, and I think you are able to glean data on that.
Yeah, we can't put a specific number on that. The network would be probably the best place to look for those specific numbers about how intimate partner violence is financially affecting women and families.
Now, that's the network for domestic and sexual violence. Gotcha. She's referring to.
Thanks, Meg.
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed that out. Meg, what can be done in these areas that we've just discussed with Allie to improve the opportunities for women to succeed?
Well, there are many things, and a lot of them are already underway, and I think we're going to hear from one of the programs that's helping women start their own businesses. We have a lot of opportunity, and I want to point out one thing to you, Rick, and all the listeners. You know, I think there's this emphasis on women in the workforce, and there are a lot of people who say, well, you know, there are women taking away jobs from men. And one thing we have to recognize in Vermont is that we have a very rapidly aging workforce. We have so many older people who are going to be retiring or are retiring now or are working past retirement age because there's no successor. Women are an untapped resource to fill these jobs and to fill these roles. So it's not a takeaway from anyone. It's really backfilling a tremendous need. And as we move forward, these 21st century jobs are already going begging, and also jobs in the trades. You know, all the construction trades, HVAC, electricians, plumbers, they are aging out. So there's tremendous opportunity to fill jobs, not to take jobs away. Just want to kind of clarify that. I think that's an easy misconception that often gets talked about. And there are programs and that, whether it's Vermont Technical College, engineering, the sciences, there are many, many programs and educational programs that are helping train women for new jobs. And we also have wonderful organizations like Mercy Connections in the Chittenden County area. We have the Center for Women in Enterprise, which is regional a federally funded program that's teaching both Mercy Connections and the Center for Women in Enterprise teach women how to start their own businesses. And that's like business planning 101, and starts from the very beginning of what you need to do to how you're going to write a business plan, how you're going to get financing. There's training opportunities out there. And then there are programs like Vermont Works for Women that has been helping women get jobs or the training to go in into the more the non-traditional fields.
That's Meg Smith. She's going to stay with us for the rest of the hour. I'm going to say goodbye now to Allie Johnson-Kurtz. She's Communication Director of Change the Story, and you can learn about their study at changethestoryvt.org. Allie, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Just a quick pitch on your question about solutions. We're having an event on Thursday evening. You can sign up at vtwomen.eventbrite.com to learn more about how to solve the challenges that we're seeing right now.
All right. Thank you, Allie. We'll be back right after CBS News.
Things are strange right now, but we are here for you at the Warren Store. Whether curbside or in-store, our newly renovated state-of-the-art deli will be putting out sandwiches, soups, salads, and grab-and-go meals. Check out our website for menus and hours. Lattes coming soon. New upstairs, Free People, Burt's Bees baby clothes, Tabitha Henry luminaries, holiday ornaments, cards, and much more. We hope to be online soon for your shopping convenience. Stay safe, follow the governor's guidelines, and have a healthy, happy holiday season. Fun, funky, and friendly, the Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. The Vermont Women's Fund makes grants to promote ideas and support programs that focus on the needs of women and girls in this state and to increase public awareness of these needs. In addition, the fund encourages women to think of themselves as philanthropists, helping them to recognize that they can make a real difference in their communities through charitable giving. Here to discuss why this is needed and how it's accomplished is the director of the fund, Meg Smith. Also joining us now is Gwen Piccolo. She's director of the Center for Women and Enterprise. Gwen, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. Listeners, you can call to join the discussion if you've got a question or comment for Meg or Gwen about the fund. You can give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Meg, what kind of grant programs does the Women's Fund offer?
Well, we offer funding to programs that provide women and girls and or girls with economic opportunities, pathways to viable careers, and also to programs that are addressing those systemic changes, as I discussed before, that are needed to really create equity within our economy. But I can give you a couple of examples. For instance, we give funding this is in the past year to Vermont Technical College to a program that teaches middle school and high school girls coding, computer coding, because once they learn at a young age, that offers them the opportunity to start at a job at a much higher entry point in technology than they could perhaps otherwise have. We also provide money for essential services like the John Graham Shelter in Addison County that is helping women and their families who are homeless, just to provide the services for them to be able to get established and earn their own living. Our funding really runs the gamut from essential services to workforce development to systemic change. And you can look on our website under grant making to see who we gave to in 2020.
And Gwen, what is the Center for Women in Enterprise?
Yeah, so the Center for Women in Enterprise is home to Vermont's Women's Business Center. So we help women start and grow their businesses through no-cost business counseling throughout the life of their business and tons of different types of trainings. We're most known for our 10-week business planning course and our 13-week strategic growth planning course called Power Forward. We receive partial federal funding from the Small Business Administration for the Women's Business Center program, and we're a regional economic development nonprofit. So we rely on relationships like the Vermont Women's Fund to be able to serve the women in startup and early stage growth businesses across the state.
And I believe you have a microloans program. So tell us about how that works and why that's important.
We actually do not have a microloan program. No. There was a pilot program out of our Rhode Island office a couple of years ago. But one of the benefits to the Center for Women in Enterprise is because we don't give out any funding, we're completely biased. So we help women get ready to go for financing, both equity, so that means taking private investment, as well as for debt capital, which is loans. And then we've done a lot of work. I know the show is all about COVID as well. And we've done a lot of work with women business owners who are seeking the state and federal financial relief products.
So how does your program work to train women to become business owners?
Sure. So we do no-cost business counseling. So we have a team of core counselors who are on call. They're kind of your primary care physician, if you will. and they are here to help business owners kind of sort out what are my next steps, what really should I be addressing now, and how do I do it, and vetting the people that they might need to bring in to help them do that kind of strategic work. And then we offer longer-term cohort-based training. We have tons of different types of workshops as well, everything from like, you know, how to arrange your taxes for this year to different types of marketing workshops. And they're a great way to start getting involved and start meeting other business owners from around the state. And then where we really thrive and where we see the real magic happen is in the longer term experiences, cohort experiences. So we have a 10-week business planning course where people come out with a finished business plan if that's what they need. Often people go into that class not really knowing where to start, or having just started making sales and are looking to get more strategic, figure out if this is really what they're going to be able to do long term to satisfy whatever requirements they have out of that business, be it financial, be it, you know, kind of morale, be it contributing to their community. And we always see people hiring each other, becoming business partners, doing collaborative buying, all kinds of really, really cool stuff. And that's the same type of thing that happens in our longer-term strategic growth planning course, which is for business owners facing imminent growth challenges. They come out of that class with a strategic plan for 3 years and then a tactical plan. Okay, what do I do tomorrow to start moving in the direction that I need to go to be moving towards my own definition of success?
Meg Smith, how do the two organizations, the Vermont Women's Fund and the Center for Women and Enterprise, work together?
We are a funder of the Center for Women and Enterprise, meaning we gave them a grant in 2020, I believe 2019 and 2018, to start help them with programs that, just as Gwen described, in different parts of the state. 1 year we funded the Rutland program, the following year White River Junction. So we're trying, our goal is to get these kinds of opportunities and services out there around the state and in all regions.
And Gwen, are there going to be economic opportunities for women once we start to recover? And I'm hoping we're doing that now, but recover from this pandemic?
Rick, I've got some good news for you.
Please.
So entrepreneurship tends to really thrive during economic downturns and times of high unemployment. So it's been interesting. We're seeing record numbers of people exploring entrepreneurship, taking, we have a monthly Steps to Start Your Business and Business Plan Basics workshops that kind of give people a brief overview of, hey, what might it look like to start a business? How do I even go about this? And we're having record attendees at those workshops.
Wow.
We've got many requests for our business planning courses. And we're seeing from our existing business owners, they are pivoting. Now, I don't want to paint a, you know, Pollyannish picture here. It is very difficult right now to own a business. And we are seeing a great amount of hope in the cohort programs at the Center for Women and Enterprise. People are making the pivot. So I do think that things are going to look a lot different, of course, when we come out of this pandemic. But I think that there is reason to have hope that there's going to be some really cool stuff happening across the state from women business owners.
So, Gwen, in this current business climate, what's your advice to women?
Stay informed and keep hopeful. And it can be difficult to do that on your own. So finding the connections that will bring you hope and raise morale is an imperative. And getting the information, you don't know how to perceive the information, how to apply it, give someone like us a call, give one of the awesome other resource providers around the state a call, and we can help you navigate these next steps.
And Gwen, is it CWEonline.org where women can go for this information?
Exactly. And they can say /Vermont, and they'll take you right to the Vermont office.
Ah, perfect. That's Gwen Piccolo. She's director of the Center for Women in Enterprise. Gwen, thanks so much for being on with us.
Thank you. And thank you, Meg and the Women's Fund, for making our work possible.
Thank you, Gwen. Can I add something here, Rick, that
sure.
we haven't talked about that in this pandemic, and what's crystallized is the need for childcare, and we haven't talked about that. That is going to be an integral, absolute essential in rebuilding our economy because our childcare system, we're not going to be able to go back to the way it was because the way it was not working well to begin with. I'm sure many folks already know how difficult it was to be on waiting lists. Childcare is very expensive. It was already a very wobbly system at best. And now, because of the COVID pandemic, we see how essential childcare is to our working economy. So that is something that, along with programs like the Center for Women Enterprise, Capstone, please, I do want people to look at our website so they can see the programs that are out there, wonderful organizations providing great resources and services. But unless we figure out how our families can take care of their children, we are not going to be able to succeed.
An excellent point, Meg Smith of the Vermont Women's Fund, and the website is vermontwomensfund.org. And we'd like to now welcome Joey Bergstein, CEO of Seventh Generation. Joey, great to have you on Vermont Viewpoint.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Joey, Seventh Generation has always been held up for their social responsibility. So how has the company thought about gender equity?
Well, gender equity has been a really important part of how we've been trying to grow and build a strong community for quite some time. Meg and I were actually talking about this the other day. A lot of the work that we have done in real earnest began back in 2015. We've got a community which actually skews to women. At the time, I think it was a 60-40 female-male split. And we discovered through the annual engagement surveys that we do with our employees that women just weren't having the same kind of experience as men. And as we dug into the situation at that point in time and got some real feedback, it was like a bucket of ice water being dumped on one's head. We realized that the experience that women were having was just not the kind of experience you would expect of a company like Seventh Generation. And from that time, we have set out to really ensure that we are creating an environment where women can really advance and grow their careers, where we create an environment that enables them to succeed. We've done a lot of work around ensuring that our leadership team is balanced 50-50 male-female. It used to be 75-25 male. The managers in our population, we've moved that to 50-50 male-female as well. Even on our board, we moved from 75% male to right now we have 6 of our 11 board members are women. So we've done a lot structurally to improve and enable women to succeed. And then also we've done a lot of work to ensure we're creating the kind of flexible working conditions that enable women to succeed and advance in the organization.
What role,
so
Joey?
Been years of work that we've been doing.
Yeah. What role do you see for women in the economic recovery of Vermont?
I think women play a vital role in the economic recovery of Vermont. I think if you took our business just as a microcosm, and as I was saying, we're a business which is largely led by women. I think if you looked at a lot of the small businesses around Vermont, they're led by incredibly amazing women, and expect to see them continue to drive and to help grow and build a strong economy here.
Joey, as a business leader, can businesses afford initiatives we hear of like paid family leave or a livable wage?
Yeah, I think it's an imperative that companies are paying a livable wage. It's almost unimaginable that that people could be earning anything less than a livable wage, especially at this moment in time. What we found at Seventh Generation is that when you put in place the structures and the systems that support women to succeed, to support all parents to succeed, you build a much more loyal employee work base, workforce, that you're enabling people to take the time they need to take care of their families while also taking care of business. And so, yeah, I think you need to look at just not the cost of one specific part of the program, but the impact that it can have, because it enables so many more amazing things to be able to happen.
Meg Smith, how important are those paid family leave, livable wage to the success of women in our workforce?
Well, they are absolutely critical. As I already mentioned, childcare has now probably become the number one issue for our recovery from this pandemic, because for women to be able to work, they and men, they need their children to have a safe place to go, 0 to 5 age group particularly. We're dealing with the hybrid school system schedule, which I can tell you for most families has been a nightmare. And they're doing their very best, but we need to have safe, affordable, high quality child care for kids 0 to 5. And then, so parents can work and have flexible schedules and be able to do their very best for our economy.
I mean, it's
absolutely critical.
Flexibility. If I can just
please
jump
do.
In just to build on that point.
Yep.
I think flexibility is something that we all know is a really important thing for women in particular, for parents more broadly. And one of the things that we've been really grappling with as we've been managing through this pandemic, especially as people are at home and taking care of their families and still at the same time trying to contribute in the best possible way they can to the business, is finding ways to build in flexibility has been a huge enabler. So one simple thing that we've done, or maybe not so simple, was we declared Wednesdays are meatless Wednesdays and canceled all meetings on Wednesdays so that people could have the time and the space to be able to, take care of their kids, do what they need to do. We picked Wednesday because a lot of the schools had kids either in class Monday, Tuesday, or Thursday, Friday. And so we thought Wednesday would enable them to take care of their families, as well as catch up on all of the things that are happening Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, Friday, so that work doesn't need to bleed into the evenings. But flexibility more broadly is such an important thing for us to be able to really help people have the time to take care of their families, as well as to be able to contribute in the best possible way they can to the business.
I know I shouldn't say this, but I love you so much right now, Joey, for Meatless Wednesdays. I can't even stand how great that idea is. I apologize.
One out of every four women right now because of the pandemic are having to choose between their job or staying at home and taking care of their kids. I mean, we're in this like crazy, untenable situation that no one ever expected. So to have an employer like Seventh Gen, mm-hmm. looking at flexibility, it's just wonderful.
And
Thank you, Joey,
we're just about out of time, but how do you, you know, you get it. You've incorporated this into what's going on there at Seventh Generation, but how do you spread the word? How do you get other companies to adopt these same types of, this same type of philosophy?
That's a great question. I mean, we're also fortunate to be part of a much larger ecosystem, Unilever, which is incredibly supportive of working moms and has won a number of different awards for best places for working moms. So, you know, we operate within a system that embraces these kinds of values. I love conversations like this because, to your point, I think it's important that we talk about this. And, you know, again, this is about doing the right thing and it having the right kind of impact. I was on in a similar kind of conversation a couple of weeks ago, well, actually just before the holidays. And I think I'm operating in COVID time at this point.
We all are.
We were talking with other businesses about, you know, what can we do to both enable women to succeed, but also to build more racial equity into our businesses. You know, both, you know, are incredibly important, especially at this moment in our history.
That's Joey Bergstein, CEO of Seventh Generation. Joey, thank you so much for being part of this discussion today.
Well, thanks for including me. It was great to be with you.
And Meg Smith is the director of the Vermont Women's Fund. You can learn more about their work at vermontwomensfund.org. Meg, it's been great having you on this morning.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's a total pleasure.
This is what happens when you call into my show. You become
the
guest.
I can't wait. I'm going to call again.
That's it for our show today. Thank you. Vermont Viewpoint is produced by Taylor Dobbs and directed by Danny McGivergan. Our email address is vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Please feel free to suggest topics or guests. And you can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading our podcast at wdevradio.com. Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre up next here on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. I'll meet you back here tomorrow.